Awesome. Thank you very much. And first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me for this great activity. I had the pleasure to have a lot of discussions, important also for this talk. And second, I would like to thank Catalina for giving a nice introduction to thermoelectrics, which then I would mostly skip and only do the introduction to those parts which I need for my talk, and a few references on what I'm going to talk about, mostly two works which will be completed soon and sent to archive. Let me start from the very beginning with what I'm going to talk about. This is a thermoelectric transport and theory. Thermoelectric means I will be dealing with very low temperatures, basically 100 millikelvin. So the theorist vision of what's going on in thermoelectric transport through nanostructures. So one has a quantum dot, the island of two-dimensional electron gas confined in electric potential. Then the left lid, for example, can be make hotter than the right one, and it's usually done by pushing the current along the lid. So this is an experimental picture how it works. Then the reference temperature, as I said, in the order of 100 millikelvin, and the gradient temperature gradient is controllable because the resistance of the contact is known. This is a quantum dot. And what is measured actually is the voltage which is applied across the dot in order to make current equal to zero. So the current is then zero, and Zebe coefficient or thermoelectric power is just the ratio of the voltage applied across to the dot and the temperature gradient. Or on the other hand, since, as I said, the current is zero, it's ratio of thermoelectric coefficient, which measures the response on current on the temperature gradient to the conductance of the system. So what do we know about metals? I'm going to talk about metallic quantum dots, actually. And what do we know about metals? The thermoelectric power, which, as I already said, is a measure, let me come back, if you multiply it by the charge of the electron, it's a measure of the transferred energy of the electron per temperature gradient. And in metal, as we all know from the textbook, the thermoelectric power is linear in the temperature and proportional to the ratio of temperature and the Fermi energy. So the smaller temperature is, the smaller thermal power it is. And you can also realize the similarity between thermoelectric power and entropy flow through the dot. So the question is how to enhance the thermoelectric power, and why do we need to enhance thermoelectric power? Because I said this is average energy transferred, energy of electron. So if experimentalists measure to make efficient device on a nanochip in order to make a heat guide, one needs to control the heat transferred at low temperatures by enhancing the thermoelectric power. So this is a motivation, basically. So what one can do dealing with Fermi liquids is actually decrease the denominator. And we know from the physics of strongly correlated systems that in strongly correlated metals, the thermal power can be relatively big, while the Fermi energy is replaced by some new energy scale, which depends very much on the interaction and the scattering effects. So the way to enhance the thermoelectric power is to deal with the strongly interacting systems, and I'm going to present some theory which accounts for effects of strong interactions or strong resonance scattering. Just to give you an example how it can be done, let's consider a Condé effect. It will also be a very important ingredient of my theory. And what is known for Condé is that Condé effect facilitates the formation of quasi-particle peak at the Fermi energy, and this peak is quite narrow. And at low temperature, the Condé temperature, which is the width of the quasi-particle peak, replaces the Fermi energy, and therefore the thermoelectric power in Condé regime is proportional to the ratio of temperature and Condé temperature.
This enhancement of thermal power, is it similar to what happened with heavy fermions?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Michelle, in general, I guess you could expect power different from one. So here it is out to some exponent.
No, in Fermi liquid regime, it's linear. because as I said, it's basically...
You're trying strong correlations or something.
This is a part of the story. I'm not going to talk about change of the power law, but I will try to convince you that there is a logarithm enhancement. So it might be multiplied by some another function which scales as a function of temperature with some effective scale, which can be quite big.
So
but in principle,
liquid,
power law can also
liquid,
be. Yeah.
Or closer
yeah.
from a liquid.
And the scaling of maximum of term power, I will explain, will be precisely square root of a temperature to the T star times big logarithm. This is a message which I'm going to give you at the end of my talk. Let me actually ask a few questions as a motivation. First of all, how do this effect of strong correlations manifest themselves in thermoelectric transport through the nanostructures? What are possible mechanisms of enhancement of thermoelectric power? Is the thermotransport through nanostructures always characterized by the Fermi liquid concept? And moreover, since I'm attending the spintronics program, at the end of the day, I'm going to discuss spin-dependent effect. So how to control, so what is the role of spin in the thermoelectric transport, and how can one control the thermoelectric transport manipulating with spin by Zeeman magnetic field, or if time permits, I will touch upon a little bit a question about strong spin orbit interaction, and then Carlos will, I think, continue with the strong spin orbit interaction in two-dimensional and one-dimensional structures. Good. Just since not everybody is dealing with transport, quantum transport through quantum dot, let me give you a key ingredient of this transport, what is known. The quantum dot, as I said, is an island of two-dimensional electron gas. It is separated by two barriers from the source and drain, and it's also subject of electrostatic potential, which is controlled by the gate voltage. So conductance, as a function of gate voltage, demonstrates peaks and valleys associated with the quantization of charge in the quantum dot. So this is a Coulomb blockade effect. So in the valleys, charge is integer. In peaks, we have a regime of jumps of the number of electrons from n to n plus 1. And if one assumes that the Mott relation, which Catalina already introduced, holds, and Mott relation is again something which is specific for Fermi liquid, even with the interaction, Fermi liquid interacting with phonons and Fermi liquid with impurities, I'm not yet talking about interaction, then the Mott relation says that the thermoelectric power is basically the derivative of the logarithm of conductance with respect to Fermi energy, or here it's a derivative of the logarithm of conductance with respect to the gate voltage. So you see in each and every point where conductance has extrema, the thermopower is zero, but the peaks and valleys are very much different, because in peaks the thermopower growing linear in the vicinity, but in the valleys something happens. So the first theory of thermotransport through the quantum dot was done by Binaker and Starring, and using sequential tunneling mechanism, they obtained this sawtooth-like curve, which says that in principle the thermoelectric power in valleys diverges as one over temperature, which is definitely a strange result, which need to be understood and corrected. So the first prediction, as I said, based on sequential tunneling mechanism, was saying that in valleys, the thermoelectric power could be huge as long as the temperature goes down. So what was wrong? The understanding was almost 10 years later. Of course, the sequential tunneling mechanism, which works pretty nice in the vicinity of Coulomb peak, doesn't work at all in the Coulomb valleys, where the tunneling is governed by catunneling regime. And therefore, if one actually takes into account the catunneling, it repairs the problem and says that thermopower everywhere cannot be larger than, say, one over charge of electron, which is natural units of measuring thermopower. So again, I'm going to refer to experiment and also tell you what the puzzle is. It depends on this dimensional conductance. As I said, dot is in metallic regime. And actually, the Katana link suppresses this huge thermal power, which is artifact of using sequential tunneling.
Right, but the weaker the core tunneling is, the stronger
this. Oh, still there is upper limitation. I mean, of course, this dimensional conductance, well, by the way, here it's much smaller than one because this is a single electron transistor. You know, you have conductance to left and conductance to right. So this is actually your handle to manipulate the Katana link, the only thing you can do.
So you can't just do very, very small and still get very large?
No, one cannot. This is the result of experiment done by Mollenkamp in 2005, and we provide some theoretical support for it. What's the puzzle here is that for some gate voltage, where the dot is weakly coupled to reservoir, one can see that the blue curve is conductance, the orange one is thermal voltage. So this Mott-Cutler relation is basically followed, while each peak and value corresponds to zero of thermoelectric power. But as long as dot becomes stronger and stronger coupled to the leads, you see that nothing like Mott relation holds anymore, and there are pronounced odd-even effects, namely when the number of electrons in the dot odd or even, which then show plateau or zeros of thermoelectric power. And since this is odd-even effect, so since the thermoelectric power depends on whether one has odd or even electron number in the dot, the conclusion was that the Condé effect is very important, and this is probably manifestation of Condé effect. By the way, Condé effect was first observed in maximum enhancements of conductance, but thermoelectric experiments provide independent, actually, observation of independent information about Condé effect. Good. Again, the interesting question, why this Mott relations is violated. The system is strongly interacting. How to understand the effects of strong interactions in Condé regime in a controllable way? What are the manifestations of Condé effect? And again, if there is a life beyond the Fermi liquid paradigm, are there non-Fermi liquid effects which could be responsible for enhancement of thermoelectric power? And again, since I'm going to talk about non-Fermi liquid and just rephrasing famous sentence that all families, happy families, equally happy, I would say that all Fermi liquids are behaving equally, while the non-Fermi liquids should be defined, and I will give you a particular example of non-Fermi liquid behavior with well-understood properties and discuss these properties during the talk. So this non-Fermi liquid will be associated with two-channel Condé effect, and let me explain what a single-channel and two-channel regarding the transport and quantum transport through nanostructures. So the first experiment on single-channel Condé effect was done in single electron transistor. So this is a small mid-quantum dot. You see that this white segment is 100 nanometers. And then the conductance was measured as a function of temperature. Actually, and after rescaling, it was shown that if the ground state of the dot is two-fold degenerate, so namely there is a doublet since spin 1/2, then the conductance is maximally enhanced. So the Condé effect facilitates the overlap between the wave functions of the leads. With two-channel Condé effect, it's more tricky. It took to David Galtheiber-Gordon in Stanford almost 10 years to make another experiment, which is still controversial. And here, there is a small quantum dot and large metallic quantum dot. And a large metallic quantum dot here is necessary to make additional channel, so to say, which then will play some important role, I tell you. The same experiment with the same setup was repeated in quite recently. So you see that, again, this is a metallic quantum dot. And let's forget now about small dot, but just consider the transport through these two constrictions. And what was done here, both constrictions were closed such a way that the transport to the dot and out of it was tunnel transport. And then the nice conductance oscillations as a function of gate voltage were observed. with a period of oscillations which is charging energy, the dot is in a Coulomb blockade regime. And then one of the barrier was open, so it's almost transmitting quantum point contact, and then the weak quantization of charge was observed with the very same amplitude. So these two regimes are attributed to strong Coulomb blockade where charge is quantized, and weak Coulomb blockade regime where charge is almost not quantized, but the spin of the electron still remain being quantized. And the story I'm going to tell is based on that kind of manifestation of Condé effect. The first theory was suggested for devices like that by Flensberg and Matvey Furusaki. And the idea is that the almost transmitting quantum point contact, which connects the large metallic quantum dot, while the first contact is tunnel contact, this quantum point contact plays a role of quantum impurity. So what it does, it actually changes the left movers to the right movers, and therefore converting left to the right is equivalent to have isospin or flipping this isospin. So in this sense, the Condé effect appears on the charge degrees of freedom, and spin just gives you an additional quantum number which enumerates the channel. Sorry, I will show two slides with the Hamiltonian, but I'm not going to dwell into any details of calculations, just show you the pictorial way to understand the results. So what this Hamiltonian in Matvey Furusaki model describes, the left lid is just Fermi gas. The quantum dot is in weak Coulomb blockade regime. So the Coulomb blockade is here. There is a weak backscattering in the position of the quantum point contact. And there is a tunneling of electrons from the left lid to the dot. And assumptions of this model, and assumptions necessary to find a solution, is a strong coupling regime. Namely, they consider the regime where temperature is much smaller compared to charging energy. As I said, the Condé effect in this model is associated with a Coulomb interaction, and charging energy plays the role of the Condé temperature. So it will not be perturbative with respect to interaction at all. However, the dot is in a weak Coulomb blockade regime. It's a weak charge quantization. Therefore, the theory will be perturbative. First part of theory will be perturbative with respect to the backscattering. And of course, the dot is considered metallic. So any quantization of levels in the quantum dot is disregarded, since the mean level spacing in the dot is assumed to be much smaller compared to the temperature. So many, many levels of the quantum dot are involved in the quantum transport. So this is the model. So as I said, what's the physics of this? Quantum point contact reflects left to right, and this is similar to what happens in the Condé effect. So the Condé effect describes the situation where mobile conducting electrons scatter on a quantum impurity with spin, and the process of scattering, both projections can be flipped out, and therefore it results in the enhancement of conductance. If, however, you have several orbital channels, then the situation is more complicated because in addition to the flipping of the spin of the impurity, the conduction electrons provide a screening of this spin. If the number of orbital channels is larger than spin of the impurity in quantum dot, then the situation becomes overscreened because you have more orbital channel than the spin of impurity. If, however, the spin of impurity is larger than the number of orbital channels, then the situation is underscreened, the impurity behaves in Curie fashion from the point of view of magnetization. So as I said, and it will be enough for my story, that the quantum point contact reflects left movers to the right movers. And therefore, in the absence of magnetic field, the situation is like that there are two orbital channels, two spin channels, while in the strong magnetic field, when the quantum point contact is spin polarized, there is only one channel. So therefore, magnetic field may provide a transition, or better say, crossover between single quantum physics and single channel quantum physics and two channel quantum physics. Why two channel is non-Fermi liquid? As I said, for single channel, let's compare these two situations, single channel.
So what is the degree of freedom of the quantum function x, which takes the place of spin?
Well, the quantum point contact is like a short wire. It's one-dimensional system, and we assume that this is single mode quantum point contact. So the motion in the perpendicular direction is quantized. We just have single mode. And on the next slide, I show you what the degrees of freedom. Of course, we have a barrier. And basically, the energy scale, which then becomes very important, is a distance from the top of the barrier to the Fermi energy. So this is a degree of freedom to play with, and also magnetic field, which is important. And then, as I said, if time will permit, time permits, I will talk what kind of effects of strong spin-orbit interaction can do with this system. So in principle, we have three. Good. So as I said, scattering of electron on impurity results in full screening of it. And this is one of the most important manifestations of Condé effect. So at very low temperatures, which is a strong coupling regime, the spin quantum impurity loses its spin properties at all. So the susceptibility at low temperatures is constant. It's Pauli-like. And this is why people talk about screening. And the thermoelectric power, which I said behaves like the entropy, is linear function of temperature. However, what people know about behavior of two channels quantum physics, and Andreas Ludwig is one of the person who's in Santa Barbara, who made one of the most important contribution to understanding of physics of two channel quantum effect. There, the number of orbital channels is larger than twice the spin of impurity. What one can learn from the conformal field theorem is that susceptibility of this system diverges as a logarithm of quantum temperature to quantum temperature. And as was shown by Matveev and Andreev, the thermoelectric power has a logarithmic enhancement, while the power of temperature is not one, but one half. So this would be manifestation of non-Fermi liquid behavior. Good. So what is known before we started our work? That for fully spin polarized quantum point contact, the thermoelectric power, which oscillates as a function of gate voltage, you saw these sawtooth oscillations. So N is a function of gate voltage, is first of all linear function of temperature, and then linear function of reflection coefficient, reflection amplitude. While for a zero magnetic field, for a two-channel situation, when the symmetry, two-channel symmetry, is protected by time reversal symmetry, the thermoelectric power is quadratic as a function of reflection amplitude and logarithmic as a function of temperature. So the first puzzle was how to match these two behavior continuously as a function of magnetic field. And at the first glance, it's impossible to match them. However, I'll try to convince you that it is possible. Okay, in order to understand how can one come continuously from this answer to this answer, it's important to understand what a magnetic field, what are the effects of magnetic field. The first and the most simple one, which appears to be correct, is that magnetic field splits it first of all breaks the time reversal symmetry, and it splits bands in two subbands up and down. And the backscattering, which is a Born approximation, is just a Fourier transfer of the scattering potential at the momentum transfer equal to 2 Fermi momentum, is different for up and down projection because 2kF is different for these two subbands. So basically, what magnetic field does, it breaks the symmetry between channels. And then one needs to understand what happens when this symmetry between channels is no more protected. Good. So let me first tell you what happens with a quadratic dependence. Now it's a barrier, potential barrier. the function of coordinate. So maximum of the barrier sits at the origin. And what happens at zero magnetic field, where two subbands are degenerate, is that electron scatters and being reflected, weakly reflected. While when we apply magnetic field, so if the energy, if the Zeeman energy, and I'm talking about magnetic field applied in the parallel plane, if this magnetic field becomes comparable with this energy distance, that one of the components, say down, is pushed under the barrier. So the barrier for this component is no more almost transmitting. It becomes almost reflecting, while the second component survives. This is how the magnetic field manipulates, and this is how we can manipulate with channels.
Excuse me. So the QPC now with the reflection is playing the role of like the two leads that would lead to the thing at the end, right? To have the Kondo effect. My problem is, isn't this an asymmetry? Because you're reflecting electron, right? So is, I mean, they're not really two identical leads in a way.
Yes, yes. I'm only discussing those. So suppose I do have very asymmetric situation. So my left lead, so to say, is one-dimensional wire, and the right lead. And the left lead is just Fermi liquid, and I don't care about dimension. So what happens in this right lead is I put a quantum impurity, which is QCP, which reflects electron in this point. So the movers, which move from the right to the left, are reflected and move back to the left. So this reflection means that I have a backscattering. And this backscattering is precisely what is important for quantum physics. So if we take some barrier and calculate the reflection coefficients for up and down, we do see that the reflection amplitude are split at the finite magnetic field. And this is nothing but Zeeman effect. Good. This is just for experts showing that if the time reversal symmetry is protected, the zero magnetic field push the system of two channel, here it's reflection or transmission, to the strong coupling point of two channel Condé effect. But what it is known that this point is unstable. So this is a hyperbolic point. As soon as the symmetry of channels is broken, the system then runs, the flow runs in to one of these points, which appear to be a strong coupling points of a single channel Condé effect. To say how this thermoelectric power was calculated, precisely the way the experimentalists measure it, namely, there were independent calculation of thermoelectric coefficient, which is dI over the temperature, and conductance, and their ratio gives the Seebeck coefficient. So we didn't solve any kinetic equation, any Boltzmann equation. It was just calculating, utilizing the fact that the current through this nano device is equal to zero. So this is the way it was done. If one does a calculation, one sees that R square, which I showed you at zero magnetic field, is nothing but R up, R down. So as I said, pushing one component under the barrier then allows one to match the R square and R dependence of the thermoelectric power. In order to match linear and logarithmic dependence, one needs to do non-perturbative calculations with respect to reflection amplitude. It can be done, again, using some analogy with conformal field theories. And then one can show that what happens at finite magnetic field is that the gap which disappeared at the Coulomb peaks, the point where this degeneracy between n and plus 1 electron takes place and is responsible for Condé effect, now there is a gap proportional to square of magnetic field, which then cuts the logarithm and restores the linear dependence.
So I'm a bit confused. Maybe I'm misunderstood the connection to the sort of regular. Mm-hmm. I would have thought, as you showed, I mean, it's a crossover with field away from this intermediate coupling fixed point.
Mm-hmm.
It's an anti-Kaplan, isn't it? I've forgotten. I mean, why are there non-anomalous dimensions in this? I mean, you've only got logarithmic things, but isn't there an anomalous dimension associated with that fixed point?
No, what I'm saying is that at any finite magnetic field, the system, the stable fixed point is single channel quantum physics, which means that if one can access the energies below the new energy scale, which I show what it is, then inevitably one comes into the single channel fixed point. You know, two-channel quantum physics was debated along in connection with quantum point contact, but what is known that two-channel quantum physics, one of particular realization of non-Fermi liquid, is unstable fixed point. So any asymmetry...
Somewhere in the amplitude, there should be some anomalous dimension to do with the non-Fermi liquid Fermi fixed point. I mean, you're going to low temperatures. I mean, aren't there some extra amplitudes which would be there if you took very low field?
It's more complicated than anomalous dimension. You know, the S matrix loses its unitarity because appearance of inelastic channels, and therefore things...
So there's no simple crossover?
No. Well, I tried to do hand-waving explanation what happens and what is a crossover, because I will be discussing the maximum of thermopower at the gate voltage where it reaches the maximum value, and then one can subtract some power loss. And then probably one can call it anomalous dimension. So this is how these curves look like. You see that when the temperature is low down and 10 to the minus 3 of charging energy, which again is not something science fiction. The charging energy is of the order of 10 Kelvin, becomes very much non-sinusoidal and peaked close to the gate voltage corresponding to Coulomb peaks. However, the magnetic field suppresses this effect very much. So this is how the thermoelectric power depends on the magnetic field. So what you see is that closer to the non-Fermi liquid regime you are, the stronger effects of magnetic field one can expect. And again, as a function of temperature, there is some saturation of thermoelectric power, which again independently was obtained recently by Ronka, by a Slovenian group doing NRG calculations for single electron transistor. So the specific of two-channel or single-channel realization Conde effect associated with charge degrees of freedom doesn't play so important role. I mean, many conclusions which can be drawn out of controllable theory done for the quantum point contact remain for the single electron transistor as well. The reason why I'm dealing with the quantum point contact, as I said, this is a unique situation where one can address the effects of strong interaction in controllable non-perturbative way. While in the conventional Conde effects in the electron transistor, basically it's open question. There are no known methods. There are no beta and zats out of equilibrium. There is no conformal field theory, nothing. So it's very difficult to come to controllable results. Only numerics could help. Yes?
So this is kind of an equilibrium limit, right? You still have a weak, sort of in linear response regime.
Yeah, it's linear response, so zero current.
What about the stability of the fixed point in the nonlinear regime? Is the non-Fermi liquid fixed point also unstable to, like, let's say, strong drive, like in the same way as B kind of destroys this quantum coherence?
Look, if this fixed point is unstable even in linear regime, I don't expect that nonlinear regime will stabilize somehow.
No, zero magnetic field. Let's say you change the ratio of D over the bias or something like that. So you're in a regime where you have a strong bias, but zero field, you can still...
Look, it's a question of what are the relevant perturbations. We showed that magnetic field provides you a relevant perturbation which drives system into the Fermi liquid regime. Yeah. We can consider another mechanism. For example, hyperfine interaction, which provides some Oberhauser field, weakly fluctuating or slowly fluctuating Oberhauser field, it will do the same. But you're right, it's an interesting question how to stabilize the non-Fermi liquid regime, and I will try to present arguments that the strong spin-orbit interaction might protect non-Fermi liquid regime for some values of Zeeman field below the spin-orbital field. So, thank you. Very good question. And as I said, the resolution of puzzle is that R square is matched with R because one of the component is pushed under the barrier, and the Fermi liquid behavior is restored, but this is a giant Fermi liquid behavior. So unlike the charging energy here, which is a manifestation of Strong-Coulomb interaction, here we have energy scale which is controlled by magnetic field in denominator, and actually matches with a single channel Condé effect only if magnetic field is of the order of the bandwidth, the full polarization of one-dimensional system. Let me skip it. The message from this story, the message to take home, is at any finite magnetic field that appears in new energy scale, which is proportional to square of the magnetic field times Coulomb interaction, below which the Fermi liquid behavior is restored. So if the measurements are done at the temperature smaller than this temperature, only Fermi liquid behavior can be observed. If, however, the measurements are done in the temperature range between the minimal temperature and maximum temperature related to symmetric and anti-symmetric combination of reflection amplitudes, then the fingerprint of non-Fermi liquid regime manifests themselves as the square root log behavior of maximums of thermoelectric power. There, one can very long be in almost symmetric situation. The flow goes along the bisectrice and then it deviates. So this fingerprint can still be observed, and above this temperature, there is a perturbative regime which is accessible theoretically by just doing simple perturbation, but still has some logarithmic enhancement. And if the energy is larger than the Coulomb energy, everything is undressed, and one can see just standard Fermi liquid regime of the thermoelectric power. So you see, in this scale, one comes to regime going back where the Coulomb interaction becomes more important, drive system into the kind of non-Fermi liquid regime, which then falls down into the Fermi liquid picture at the end of the day. So the question is whether it's possible to protect non-Fermi liquid, and if we would like to do it, what should we look for? And let's now consider the situation when this constriction is subject to Zeeman magnetic field, which is applied in plane, because I don't want to discuss the orbital effects. And then there is a strong spin-orbit interaction in the quantum point contact. If we would like to think about materials, then it's rather indium arsenide, indium antimonide, where the G factor is very large, and when the effects of spin-orbit interaction can have some appreciable effects. And again, in order to skip discussion of effects of spin-orbit interaction in the quantum dot, discussed in many details in the work of Alainer and Falco, I would assume that the size of the dot is still smaller compared to effective energy scale given by spin-orbit interaction. So therefore, all what I include will be spin-orbit interaction in the one-dimensional wire. What happened then, and how to understand mechanisms of protection? Again, with one slide, I show you the Hamiltonian. It's pretty the same. It contains the description of the left lead and dot, just simple levels of the dot, the Luttinger liquid describing the right contact, the tunneling from the left lead to the dot, the Zeeman magnetic field which acts on the lead and the dot, the backscattering and Coulomb blockade. And what I need to add is just spin-orbit interaction in the quantum point contact, which can be having both the Rushbaugh component, which is perpendicular to the plane of the quantum transport, and also having the Dresselhaus component, which is associated with a crystalline anisotropy of the system. And probably, as Carlos will have time to tell, in one-dimensional systems, the Rushbaugh and Dresselhaus are, in principle, can be made comparable, or even one of them, even Dresselhaus, can be larger compared to Rushbaugh. So I don't assume any symmetry between Rushby and Dressinghaus. I don't say anything about symmetry point, but I will analyze two different cases when the Rushby is much larger than Dressinghaus, or Dressinghaus is much larger compared to Rushby. Yes, yes. But in principle, the interesting point is to include them together, but as long as the size, the linear scale of the quantum dot is smaller than the spin orbit spin length, which is 1 over mass times alpha. Alpha has a dimension of velocity. If spin orbit is 0, the spin orbit length is infinity. I'm fine to disregard this effect and argue that effects in one-dimensional wire are more important compared to effects in quantum dot. So the constriction itself is, of course, smaller than the size of quantum dot. Therefore, having assumption that the dot is smaller than the spin orbit length automatically means that the quantum point contact is even smaller.
I guess it shouldn't matter, right? Because if you have only a wire, you crush all the rest of the housing, then you only have a spin axis. That's first one.
I'm going to talk. So what happens? Again, I understand that there are many more experts here on spin orbit than on conda, but let me say very basic things about spin orbit. So we just have this one-dimensional Hamiltonian diagonalize it. And what happens at zero field, you just have two splitted parabola, which are horizontally splitted. In zero field, one can still speak about given projection of a spin associated with these two branches of the spectrum. And if this field is zero, the only scattering which exists connects the points of Kf plus delta and minus Kf plus delta. So the momentum transfer corresponding to former 2Kf is just the same 2Kf. Therefore, in a zero magnetic field, when we just have two parabolas splitted, nothing happened with the two-channel Condé effect. So spin orbit effect itself, while not violating, not breaking time reversal symmetry, can do nothing with channel asymmetry. So far, so good. I mean, however, if the finite magnetic field is applied, then there is a gap opened at the point k equal to zero, and we cannot no more associate the spin projection with a given subband, plus and minus, and the spectra, which can be easily computed by diagonalizing 2x2 matrix, for Rushby spin orbit interaction lead to, say, quadratic Zeeman effect. The additional energy associated with magnetic field is proportional to B square, while in case of the Dressinghaus case, there is a competition between Rushby, between linear and quadratic Zeeman effect. And moreover, the spectra depends on the angle between the direction of the Zeeman field and direction of spin orbital field. This situation remains in general, so the only parameter which enters the answer will be the angle between the real magnetic field and spin orbital magnetic field. I told you about spectra. Let's discuss the scattering. Again, if the field is zero, what we have are these 2Kf processes, which in the basis of new bands are associated with intra-band scattering. I always assume that my Zeeman field is smaller compared to spin orbit field, while if the field is larger, it's just a previous story. It's just Zeeman, we forget about spin orbit. However, since one cannot associate the spin projection with given band, there are also scattering processes within each of subband. And if one computes it in Born approximation, this reflection amplitude themselves are proportional to magnetic field. So this is how the scattering occurs in the presence of spin orbit interaction. And since this reflection amplitude contains the momentum associated with this band and this band, they are different. So they are intrinsically different. And moreover, one can see that their difference actually is much larger than those without spin orbit effect. And therefore, the spin orbit effect, so to say, one needs to compare red curve and blue curve, can protect non-Fermi liquid behavior in the situation when the spin orbit effect is strong. Good. What is?
You consider just the strict one-dimensional one, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Reichlau field is, let's say, perpendicular to the direction of the
yeah, Reichlau field. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the magnetic field should be also perpendicular.
So I have a Rajban. This is a plane of my quantum dot. I have a Rajban which is perpendicular to the plane and perpendicular quantum point contact. Magnetic field is in the plane of two-dimensional electron gas. But it can change its direction. Suppose there are four coils which change aspect ratio of magnetic field. So magnetic field can change its direction in plane. So if I add Dresselhaus, then the angle will be precisely the angle between the direction of Dresselhaus and in plane. But with Rajban, it's always that whatever I do with magnetic field, nothing depends on angle. So the Rajban field is always perpendicular to the plane. The reason why I mentioned Dresselhaus is that it gives you additional degrees of freedom. Namely, if the Dresselhaus field is stronger compared to Rajban, then changing the aspect ratio of Zeeman magnetic field in plane, one can make all thermoelectric coefficients dependent on the angle between spin orbit field and Zeeman field. And therefore, the reflection amplitude becomes non-monotonic function of magnetic field at given angle. I mean, you calculate it at different angles, and you see that in principle you can find a regime where linear Zeeman and quadratic Zeeman compete. And therefore, one can have also non-monotonic dependence of thermoelectric power as a function of magnetic field.
This is, if you have, let's say, if the quantum wires are along the x direction, let's say,
yeah.
Then the Rajlau field is along the y direction.
Yes.
Okay. Then the magnetic field can live in the x, y, x, z direction.
Yes, precisely.
Do you consider...
suppose Rajlau is zero.
No. Just we don't see a Rajlau. Then if the magnetic field lives in this x, y, x, z plane, then you also...
Nothing depends on the direction of magnetic
field. I agree, but then you have orbital effects.
No. Magnetic field is in plane of quantum dot. Magnetic field is in plane of two-dimensional electron gas. I don't have orbital effects in this situation.
Yeah.
But let's come. So this is x direction. This is x direction. So magnetic field is always in xz direction. So this is where this two-dimensional electron gas lives. This is my almost last slide. Rajban is in y direction. Dresselhaus in the direction of transport. So if we ignore Dresselhaus, this is the story I told you. However, the Dresselhaus component allows you to actually make the thermoelectric transport angle dependent. So there are many interesting open questions. For example, let me also mention that we can manipulate with a back gate. We change the density of electron gas in the quantum point contact. And therefore, the system can be tuned to regime where the chemical potential is in the gap. It's a low density regime. Then there will be also interesting transition because we come to the situation when one subband is completely depleted. So the two channel to one channel Conde effect can be also tuned by electric field. And moreover, if we start to consider effects of finite size of the quantum dot, if the size of quantum dot becomes comparable with spin orbital lens, we can also expect some interesting effects in this situation. So these are my conclusions, and thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Arnoldia.
So can you translate this funny behavior of the thermal power in a non-Fermi liquid behavior? For double dots, because you can find also non-Fermi liquid behavior there.
It's interesting question. So double dot can be considered as two Conde impurity model, which has also a special point where it can be mapped onto channel Conde effect. In principle, this is a very interesting direction, and we think about it. But thank you very much In principle, yes. Gans?
Could you also stabilize this Fermi liquid fixed point that is unstable in double dots using this trick of the spin orbit?
Maybe also yes. So to stabilize in some peak sense that for some small magnetic field, the system is not so sensitive to it being protected by something else. Mm-hmm. Intrinsically, to channel Conda, strong coupling fixed point is unstable. And you know, any perturbation, even finite source drain bias can destabilize it. But one needs to find something which protects. And I think that spin orbit can be a good candidate for protection of non-Fermi liquid behavior.
So the Seebeck coefficient that you calculate is indeed a linear quantity. It's calculated in linear response. Why do you need to introduce non-equilibrium calculation in your?
No, no. Actually, I didn't tell anything about calculations. We did everything in equilibrium. So using Matsubara, so it's just a matter of convenience. For these calculations, I'm fine with the kind of thermodynamics Matsubara calculations.
Can you use, for instance, energy or something like that?
This is what I try to convince my friends in Munich to use energy in order to compute thermoelectric power, but they're still struggling with energy for conductance, you know, understanding things, although this is almost understood. But the next step, the next important step would be to go to thermoelectrics. So we hope that energy will provide all necessary information.
So what is measured here is basically there is a current, so kind of a non-local conductance, right? Actually, I mean, if you don't think about the time, you know, if you don't convert this current into the
no, what's measured is voltage. Current is zero. So
pass a current.
It pass a current and just to heat
right.
The limit.
But that's the current. That is the knob you have.
No, this current just provides me temperature gradient. And according to what Mollenkopf says about his experiment, so his reference point is 40 millikelvin, and the temperature gradient, which they don't have independent thermometer to measure, they just get it from Joule heat, is like 5 millikelvin, which is pretty linear regime.
Well, do they measure temperature separately? Or do they,
no. They only measure reference temperature, and then they subtract this temperature gradient through the Joule heat, which makes me a bit unhappy, but this is what they have.
I'm just wondering, because you can have all sorts of other non-local effects, like one of them would be called Edelstein inverse Edelstein effects, that you kind of like generates spin accumulations that lead into the dot, and that would give you, you know, basically voltage drops.
What actually happens in reality is also quite controversial. For example, you may ask me where this temperature drop happens. In theory, the temperature drop happens in a tunnel barrier. So the temperature of all this orange area is the same as the temperature, while the temperature of this contact is hotter. But in reality, of course, it's not like that. But this is kind of assumption which we made in the theory.
But I guess experimentally, just to follow up on this, experimentally, you first need to check that there are no kind of linear non-local coefficients, right?
Yeah,
so the linear. So this is kind of quadratic effect, right? All these kind of Edelstein type of effects would be linear, and then you have to first make sure that those effects are not there. Linear, this kind of applied current, right?
This is what they do.
You can also make sure that the frequency is time dependent. So, as you say, so it is, for instance, omega 2.
What is the frequency? Is it the frequency in the current or like that?
No,
they are
linear versus non-linear, like we just oscillate, but you measure DC.
So, in order to measure in differential, we apply small AC component.
Well, actually, I guess they also have some, I think AC won't solve the unit, so you can have also the ratchet effect, which would also cause that unit.
Okay, sure, but that's life, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that's so you have to all, like, get them all out.
In principle, for 1D electron system, I mean, Luttinger effects might be important, right? So does that change just the power law, or would it change the stability of these fixed points?
the nonlinear effects as a function of temperature or voltage or just curvature of the spectrum? What kind of nonlinearity?
I mean,
just interactions?
Yeah, just adding interactions, like not
interactions. Oh, yeah, but this can be done straightforwardly. I mean, I use the Lachenger constant equal to 1, but it can change, of course, as it does for conductance. I mean, but
no,
this can be, this can be included straightforwardly. It's not
some prefactor somewhere.
Like doing Kane-Fisher-like physics for thermoelectric transport. It can be done. In principle, it's interesting. But we first, I mean, wanted to understand basics and then to go and include interactions in one-dimensional systems.